And we are back with episode 366 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Charlie with darker hair. And that Gary, you know, he just died last season, and, you know, good riddance, because, you know, he was just a turncoat.
Oh, that's right. And I can't really be sure. Is it Charlie, or are you really Gary again, or... Gary's dead. Are you sure? Because I could have swore you were working at a Texan bar at some point. Anyway, whatever the case may be, we are going to be obviously getting away from talking about New York Comic Con and getting back into our usual action of talking about these shows that we love. And since Edmund is not quite here yet, we're going to go ahead and give the disclaimer. I sure hope that you're ready for spoilers, because we're going to be giving you them. But we've been waiting about a week or longer, in this case, to talk about the shows that we're going to discuss. So hopefully you've had plenty of time to get ready. But hey, let's go ahead and jump right on in. And Gary, hey, this is a show that you love.
And we're going to
start with that. Lost. We're going to talk about Lost.
I was kidding.
Okay, fine. There are some interesting angles of the show that we're going to talk about first, though. But come on, let's face it, the show that we're all waiting to hear about again, one that's been off for quite a while. Yep, that's right, Covert Affairs. Let's go ahead and run the promo.
Annie's going off the grid, but she'll be back in 4 weeks with a new look, a new mission, and a new night and time.
A hell of a thing. This is only going to end one way, you know.
I'm already dead. What have I got to lose?
Covert Affairs returns in 4 weeks with a new night and time, Thursdays at 10 on...
All right, and that's Covert Affairs, Season 4, Episode 11, Dead. Annie begins her first deep cover operation alone. Back at the CIA, Augie, Joan, and Arthur try to get a handle on the reaction to Annie's quote-unquote death. Ooh, boy. Gary, get us started with this one.
Oh, gosh. You know, there's a few different pieces to every Covert Affairs show. We'll start off with my favorite piece, which, of course, is Annie, and I will skip her alternate name for right now, and we'll just stick with that to keep things less confused for everyone. Anyway, so Annie's still trying to unravel Henry Wilcox's schemes and find evidence that will both implicate him and hopefully... clear everybody else out at the CIA and get Arthur back into his position, hopefully, and Joan as well, and even find room for Augie, I guess, to work again. So she's got a lot of pressure on her to make this succeed, and she's really active on her own. They call this a deep cover operation, and she's using skills that aren't completely unknown to us. You know, she's grabbing people's some possessions, getting a safe place to hide or to work out of while she's scoping out people, tailing people, getting information on their whereabouts, their schedules, finally making contact with people. In this case, Henry Wilcox's, I don't know if it was, she was actually an ex-wife, but Jay's mother. So she starts to ingratiate herself with him, and she finally gets to the point where she ends up getting into the woman's company with her fiance, who owns the company, and it's tied into Henry Wilcox's, I guess, I don't know if it's oil, petrochemical, or what the companies exactly are, but as she's going to a presentation to an American for the presentation, the person who's they're making the presentation to is the same person that set up Arthur's son, Ty?
Gosh.
Teo. With the rocket launcher that blew up the helicopter, and she recognizes her. And I'm not quite sure how it was that he recognized her, but that little loose point aside, they realized something was happening, and she started to violently assault say it's out of character, but I guess it shows the levels to which she's been pushed. So I guess there's that. But anyway, so she goes about, you know, basically trying to torture the guy and to get the information from him, and then through what I don't believe was an accident, honestly, the man was able to try and make an escape. So it was just very atypical any behavior, the whole situation. Although I guess that's where we've been leading to in a lot of ways. We've talked about how she's gotten so far from the girl who would trip over and need help from two or three other, Augie and another agent to finish and complete her mission. And I see her as very different from that. I was talking with someone about it, about the show, and they mentioned the fact how the opening should be the giveaway that it's no longer the little cutesy show that we started off with, and I think it's reached that point for me. What do you think, John?
Yeah, definitely. This episode felt like a huge step up, and we're talking about a show that we had already felt had made leaps and bounds in terms of maturing, and this episode just was... This was a lot further as far as Annie and her character. When they promised that she was going to never be quite the same again, and they weren't kidding. That's all I can say about that. I mean, yeah.
Well, you know, and they've precursored this. You know, we see Augie's, I guess what you want to say, ex-wife. We've seen, her name escapes me. At one point when Annie was transferred from Jones to that other woman's custody, they've been showing these strong women who have had to basically go out on their own, and how I don't know if damaged is the right word, but you know how having to take that journey has changed them. So I think they've really been precursoring this for a long time, even if we didn't catch on to it earlier.
Yeah, I would definitely say that this was something that they've established as coming. But I just was really impressed by, well, first of all, Piper Perabo did an amazing job in this episode. I mean, just being able to pull off some of the things that she did, and yeah, there are some storytelling shortcuts that they took. I mean, to me, I would have much preferred that instead of her revealing her identity this quickly, that she could have maybe spent another episode or two establishing her new identity and ingratiating herself to Jay's mother and setting up her allies and making her move. But It seemed to me like, with
well, don't forget, we only have, yeah, I was going to say, this isn't a full network series that you have a 27-episode series, right. Or even a 22-episode set. This is, limited, so we don't have that luxury.
Exactly. So, I understood where we were, what we were dealing with, but, it also seemed to me that in the 4 weeks since the show was on, apparently she was watching 24 reruns because she kind of, her inner Jack Bauer came out. I never would have expected Annie to do quite what she did in that torture scene. And she was pretty cold about the whole thing. She was fairly committed to what she was going to do. And
well, you know what? Basically, she had to give up her life because of Henry Wilcox, so she wants him to pay, and I can understand her motivation. It doesn't seem forced. It almost seems natural, and as I said, they've been showing us, and I don't know, maybe it's just because it's women, but they've been showing these different women that have had to go into hiding or go into deep cover for a good season and a half now. So I get the sense the writers knew where they were taking Annie and sort of wanted to give us a flavor for it, maybe, or see how we liked it along the way.
Yeah, that was all really good stuff to me. I mean, I enjoyed just about everything that was Annie-centric. I really enjoyed her just being able to see her skills be used in a natural way as she had her own agenda and she was doing all this stuff. I really liked the fact that Augie and Calder are in on it.
Well, I like that, but there's still sort of flaws. Like, while he's looking at his phone, does he really expect that Annie's gonna call him on his phone? Given that they're doing everything to believe that she's been killed. Now, that being said, some of those moments, especially I think one right after, I think Augie was having a polygraph, but I wasn't that sure. The room was pretty dark, but that was my sense of he was in the polygraph room about the whole situation, and he and Calder both going at him in the hallway. You killed her, dude! right in front of Henry Wilcox as your audience, and now that was good, as well as their scheming, although I honestly can't believe that these two guys who are trying to scheme to take down Henry Wilcox continue to meet in such public places, literally public places, in front of the Marine Memorial at one point, and I forget where else they... in front of the Capitol building. They were not very nice set-up scenes, and they looked nice cinematically. But if these guys are trying to take down Henry Wilcox and they're trying to pretend that they're enemies of each other, the last thing they're going to do is continue to meet in public like this. It's absurd.
Yeah, these were some of the storytelling shortcuts that I think they had to take just because of time. But, even said, just the Augie Calder alliance, we've seen enough of Calder to know that it's not like he's definitively on their side. He's on the side of what he perceives as being right. And it happens to align right now with what Annie and Augie are trying to do. But if they went over the line from what he felt was justified, I could see him turning on them. Not necessarily turning on them in a bad way, but
letting go, sort of. Yeah.
You know, like not saying helping. That, yeah, exactly. It's like, no, this isn't the right.
Well, you right. say that, but at this point now, he's basically, he hasn't killed Andy. He's reported that he has. He's filed it officially. He's now, if we're to be believed from what we're seeing on TV as, his side, he's now helping to set up Henry. So I realized earlier on where I would have agreed with you completely that he's a neutral arbiter looking for good. I think he's starting to lean, I'll say, our way a little bit more. I don't think he's quite as impartial as he was coming in.
At the same time, we know that Henry has planted so many people in the organization one way or the other that the only way for him to really get things where they should be is to work with and to do the things that he's done. But I just get the sense that it's not as straightforward as he's now on their side, and he'll do whatever it is that it takes to help them. I don't think he's necessarily helping them. I think he's trying to fix what's wrong and what's broken right now. But it's fun to see them interact, given all the tensions that they had earlier in the season.
No, but I think he realizes that Henry is wrong.
Oh, yeah, I know that he feels that Henry is wrong. What I... Pause of the severity of how far Henry has gotten into the CIA and gotten people that are loyal to him into the CIA that has forced Calder, in order to fix everything, to go as far as he has.
Okay, I see. You're sort of saying he's more anti-Henry than pro-Arthur.
Right, exactly.
Okay, I see where you're going with that then.
Yep. So, yeah, that I think probably puts that into the... That at least helps me see the through line for the character, because that's who he's been. And so, yeah, that... I just see that as a complication that could come down the road. Or even if they are aligned for the rest of the season, I would then think maybe Calder would make a good character to keep around for the next season, because he is this kind of, you know, friendly but possibly adversarial character to have around.
So he's their Jesse?
Yeah, there you go. He's their Jesse.
But, you know, and that being said, you know, they've been doing so well with Arthur. I was a little disappointed with this episode, and it's now the second or third time where we've had, you know, this Arthur vignette with Joan. Oh, I just want to be home with the baby. Now, don't get me wrong, I have a child as well and a family, and I can appreciate that. But it seems to be the only note they're playing on him lately, and they had been doing so much better with him. I'm a little disappointed.
Well, I think they're underscoring the fact that this isn't a situation where Arthur or Joan can just kind of, oh, we're gonna help out Annie and she's got our support and everything else. Annie truly is kind of leading this on her own. So, yeah, to me that's part of the equation. And just seeing where they're at, I mean, they're just in such a... such a down on their luck type of situation right now. You know, Henry really has everybody over a barrel. But it's interesting to see how they are dealing with that. And this was really just Annie showing her just how tough she can be. And I really just loved this episode all around. I really... Yeah, there were little things here and there, but, you know, it... On the whole... As I was watching it, I was just impressed that this is how far they were willing to take the character and the story. Because last year, yeah, they really kind of started stretching things and doing new things with Annie, but this year really feels like they took it to a big step in up to the different level as far as just how far they're willing to go with her and let her move outside of her comfort zone.
Well, you know, that I don't know if move out is the right way, but change what her comfort zone is might be a better analogy for that, because she's handling everything perfectly well. She doesn't even seem to have the sort of doubt or suspicions that we've seen from her character in earlier seasons, but she's doing just fine. She's like, okay, I got to do this. You know, I think of the look on her face. She was walking out of the boardroom meeting when she knew she was basically going to assault this gentleman, assault the guy, and she's just sort of like nods her head and starts walking.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, let's see. I gave this one a 9 out of 10. This was easily my favorite of the season so far, and one of my favorite episodes of the series as a whole.
I didn't think I'd ever get that high a score out of you, John.
Well, I gave the last season's finale a 9, so yeah. This definitely was on the same level. How about you? What would you give it?
Yeah, it could have. There was a few flaws in it, but it definitely deserves a solid 9. Absolutely, it was a really good episode. I think in some ways this is the type of character we've been talking about her getting to from even the first season.
All right, after a little bit of technical rearrangement, we're going to go ahead and move on over to some Haven discussion. And we have a couple episodes that we can actually talk about here. And the first, well, let's go ahead and run the promo for the first one, why don't we?
Friday on an all-new Haven.
What's happening?
Do you want to see the truth?
Audrey.
I think we're looking at 4 kidnappers.
They lure their victims into the wilderness.
We think this 10-year-old boy is kidnapping the missing children.
Haven, an original series, all new this Friday at 10, part of Sci-Fi's 31 Days of Halloween.
All right, and that is Haven, Season 4, Episode 4, Lost and Found. Duke works with Jennifer to find Audrey, while Nathan and Dwight search for several children who have disappeared under the seemingly most impossible circumstances. Well, that was a little awkwardly written. Let's see. This one is, of course, the one where Audrey, quote-unquote, comes back from her unusual circumstance. And what'd you think about that, Gary?
It struck me as a little awkward. Actually having a trouble, I guess it was Jennifer that was linked to the barn, or I guess linked in the sense that she could hear what was going on. I had almost thought that I think it's Jennifer was going to be the sort of voice of the barn. Maybe it was something that got passed around, and but I guess it wasn't. And it almost seems like an awkward sort of trouble. Not that they're not all awkward in some ways, but I have to wonder how we're going to use this character when her one power is literally going to go away. it seems a little confusing. That being said, let's switch over quickly to the trouble of the week. Is this these children disappearing? It was quite an odd little almost spooky circumstance. You get these children who seemingly are this husband, turned out to be the actual source of the troubles, because this couple can't have children. I thought it was an interesting little twist on a child abduction sort of scheme. It still was extremely creepy, the way that they sort of put it together, as the parents literally are stepping out of the room for a moment while you hear the children reacting to a voice that you can't, that at least at first you can't really hear, or you just hear in giggles. And so it was had a very haunting effect. In a little ways, it reminded me of voices you'll hear in classic horror films like The Shining and stuff like that. But so it definitely had this horror aspect to it that even Haven, with all these different troubles, doesn't typically elicit that response from me. So I thought that part was very well done. Once again, these troubles of the week, while they can have their moments about them, I feel just take away time from sort of the bigger storyline, which of course is us trying to find Lexi, as she's currently called. We see her trying to get out of the barn. We see Nathan wanting to help, but at the same time, there's not much he can do. So he goes back to try and help the kids because he sort of feels in a way that that's more important. While everybody else is trying to find Lexi and locate her through what Jennifer's hearing. And, eventually they do. I thought it was handled well, this sort of double doorway concept where, she has to be sort of be welcomed into the world as well as want to leave the barn at the same time. I liked it. I liked that when she came back that she still was Lexi, and, she didn't quite understand what was going on. She wasn't going to shoot Nathan no matter how much the guard wanted her to. And, sort of showed this new character as she's been a little bit, kind of very gutsy and sort of self-opinionated, trying to be helpful where possible, but just wasn't going to put up with any crap. So in some ways, I thought it was sort of nice. Audrey always sort of acquiesced a little bit easier than we see Lexi doing. So it's a nice change of character as well.
Yeah, you know what was really odd to me? I mean, we kind of called what was going on with Audrey / Lexi in the bar, and William potentially being this avatar, I guess, of the barn and Agent Howard's replacement to some degree. all of that seemed to kind of fall into place, but what was really odd to me was this whole trouble of the week where this idea that there was this woman who was quote-unquote made to have children or something like that, it was like the creepiest way of referring to it.
Well, I'm not sure who wrote this one, but yeah, it was past creepy, and as I mentioned earlier, it was a little horror movie sort of wedged in here, you know, something like The Ring or something like that. It gave me the same sort of vibes, so I really have to say that's a good job, because it elicited that out of me.
Yeah, I don't know. It was weird what the kind of message I guess they were trying to send. But at any rate, and again we get this whole thing of Jordan and her issues with Nathan and all of that still going on. So to finally have Audrey quote unquote come back, and I keep putting quote unquote because at this point it's like, okay, who are we really dealing with here? But for her to come back out of the barn. Duke and Jennifer with their chemistry, which I'm really enjoying. I didn't think that I would enjoy Jennifer as a character quite as much as I am, but she's really a lot of fun.
I agree. They've developed her a lot more than I had. They've made an effort to develop her and not just be this sort of talking mouthpiece for the barn and shuffle her off afterwards. They're building her into an extra character in the show, which is good, because honestly, the show's a little weak with female recurring characters, so we could use another one.
Yeah, definitely. Where was I going to go with this? With all of that going on, then to have Audrey come back, or seemingly come back, and then seems like it's actually Lexi, which we all kind of thought was the case when we were looking at the potential for her to come back when we were talking about the previous episode. That was a nice way to kind of say, okay, yeah, all the assumptions that these characters are making are going to be out the window. But at the same time, since we kind of felt like that was going to be the case anyway, it felt a little anticlimactic for that to happen.
Well, I was glad that they actually did it and came through with that, because I was a little afraid that they would just bring Audrey back and we wouldn't have this new character to go along with. And I don't mind it being a new character. You know, they've shown us for years now how when she comes back out of the barn, she's a different person, and how in the past these same characters have had to deal with her as a different person. So I like the idea that she's a different person. I think it's a change, admittedly, especially arguably the main character of the show, but I don't mind that gutsy move. I think it's a good idea for them to do it.
Yeah, I would agree. And I just don't know that this particular episode really brought that out yet. So I give this one a 7 out of 10. I thought that this was, much like the last couple episodes, I've been waiting for them to actually do something. And this was getting us to the point where they could probably do something, but it wasn't quite there yet. What do you think?
There was a lot of good of this episode, but I'm just going to give it a 6. It was a little weak in my opinion. I was hoping for some sort of more of a dramatic sort of bring back than just this sort of, oh, we have to be there to open the door at the same time. I wanted something a little bit more. Plus, I'm not going to get to see Colin Ferguson anymore. So I'm going to give it a 6.
Okay. All right, then we can go ahead and move on to the other episode that we were going to discuss, and that would be, well, let's go ahead and run the promo.
All New Haven.
This jungle is bad. I want you to stay away from it.
This is insane.
I couldn't control myself.
I don't know who you really are, but I will shoot you.
What the hell kind of town is this?
Surprise.
Haven, an original series, all new next Friday at 10, part of Sci-Fi's.
All right, and that's Season 4, Episode 5, The New Girl. Nathan struggles to come to terms with the fact that although Lexi is the spitting image of Audrey, her personality is the total opposite, as the two work together to investigate a deadly trouble that seems to alter the behavior of its victims. And, oh yes, the town of Haven gets to deal with Lexi. Oh, boy, did I love this. Just, I really want the Lexi thing to keep going. I don't know how long it is going to keep going, but let's go ahead and start there. I mean, it's at the very end of the episode, but there's this implication that this is actually Audrey.
Chickens. I'm so angry at that. Yes, I think it is Audrey, and I am so upset. If they don't carry through with that, I'm really going to be disappointed. You know, this show is so cookie cutter in so many ways, and, you know, here they break the mold, or at least the give it, try to shake things up a little bit, and they do this sort of retro reversion back. I'm extremely unhappy about this. In case you didn't know.
Yeah, and I agree with you, at least to some extent. I'm not going to start punching things because we have enough technical difficulties as it is. But no, I was really kind of annoyed because there were so many things that made sense for them to not go in that direction. So, I mean, they seem to be trying to have their cake and eat it too, which I don't really agree with. It all depends, like, okay, are they only going to have her reveal herself to Duke? Now, Duke, I can imagine, would be able to actually keep this close to vest. He's pretty good at, you know, keeping secrets and so forth. But there was a certain personality with Telexi that really shook things up, and it made things different. And it also forced the characters, especially the people like Jordan and the guard, to take a different tactic with everything. Because, well, for one thing, I don't like to see Jordan as a straight up-and-up villain. I think that they've been playing her that way, but if you look at her, if you look at the context of what she's dealing with, one can understand why she wants to have the troubles go away by any means necessary. And I kind of liked the idea that she'd be struggling with dealing with the fact that this is actually Lexi and not Audrey, and what that implied for how the troubles were going to have to be dealt with. Because it seems like, you know, Vince, as the leader of the guard, has already recognized that something different is going on, and yeah, that seemed to all be falling into place. And I loved her interactions with Nathan. I loved all the little things she was pulling out about, you know, her drug use and you know, being a lot more casual about certain things, and just really completely shocking in some cases. And she just seemed like a completely different person than Audrey. So I don't know how they're going to be able to do this with her actually being Audrey. And part of me was wondering, you know, are they going to have it be that, yes, Audrey's there, but there's also Lexi in there because of the circumstances of how she left the barn. Obviously, this was meant to be a shocking end to the episode, but what does it really mean going into the next episode? Who knows? But I was annoyed by that. But I tried not to let that take away too much from the fact that I really liked the episode up until that point. It was a really fun episode. I really liked the fact that it seemed to change things up.
Yeah, no, I like that Lexi took a different approach than Audrey would have to handling problems, and even her sort of, you know, well, I guess if everybody expects me to be like this, I better seem a little bit more respectable, which was cute. But it just left such a poor taste in my mouth that they decided to regress. So I was disappointed.
Okay, well, what would you give this episode?
I think I will stay with a 6.
Oh, wow, okay. Because I went up to an 8.
you know, there was a lot of good to it, but the ending just really left such a bad taste in my mouth. I was just, you know, I applauded them taking the effort to make the new character, and then to just wipe it after, you know, what seemed to be great development for the past four episodes. In just with just a line. And yes, I realize that words have the power to do that, but at the same time, you know, they even sort of say that won't happen. Who is it? The leader of the guard, what's his name?
Vince
says, you know, she's come back before, and we've tried to, you know, bring back the person she was before, and it's not possible. You know, so they almost are sort of telling us that it won't happen. So, you know, it's okay, don't worry, that can't happen, we've tried it, it won't work. And then they just say it does. It's internally inconsistent.
I hear you. I don't disagree. So there needs to be more to it. And hopefully the next episode will start to explain that. But yeah, they kind of painted themselves into a corner, at least as far as I'm concerned with this one. None too happy about that. Let's see. Well, that wraps up then our discussion for Haven, but I believe we actually have someone with us now.
Yes, you might.
Who could that be?
It's Bronstam, isn't it? Oh, not sure.
No, wait. We've been having these confusions all throughout this episode.
It's yeah. Neville. It must be Neville.
It must be. Manservant Neville? What? Anyway. And if you get that reference, people, you score some points. All right. Well, yeah, let's Edmund, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. And it's not quite the echo from Bronze Thumb. So, yes, this is Edmund from Greenville. So.
Excellent, excellent. Well, let's see. Last episode, which you were unable to be with us for, was my big recap for New York Comic Con. So since you missed that, you probably want to go back and hear a bit of that. So there you go.
Yeah.
We're not going to recap any of that here. But we have been kind of cherry-picking our way through our long, incredibly long list of things to discuss. And so we're going to continue doing that, so bear with me as I completely go all over the show notes that I prepared as we try to get through some of this. I'm obviously going to pick shows that both Gary and I and you watch, as the case may be, as I continue to butcher grammar all over the place. But let's see. Why don't we...
I don't think of one.
That I want to go to that show next. Let's go ahead over to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., why don't we?
Okay.
Bronze Thumb already did his reviews for this, so we can weigh in ourselves, and he'll just have to deal with that. All right, let's go ahead and run the promo for the first of two episodes we are going to discuss.
I see the future, Mr. Coulson, and it's a catastrophe.
All new ABC next Tuesday, their most bizarre case yet.
And the attackers?
Invisible.
Invisible. Cool.
Is her first mission ever.
You're going in with no self-defense skills?
I have a few tricks up my sleeve.
I am trying to protect you.
But nothing can prepare them for this.
We have to live with the choices we make.
Killing innocent people.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Watch an all-new episode live next Tuesday at 8, 7 Central on 8.
All right, and first up is Season 1, Episode 3, The Asset. Agent Coulson and the S.H.I.E.L.D. team spring into action after a brilliant scientist is kidnapped. Ah, yes. Edmonds, start us off here, if you don't mind. What did you think of this episode?
Well, this one, certainly... given the doubts I'd already voiced about why you should let a member of the opposition into the team so easily, I was kind of pleased to see them both address those. I mean, having the asset, as they put it in the title, basically be the focus of the operation, and then seemingly sell them out in the middle, justify the fact that why should you have this member of Rising Tide who is supposedly on your side but not really on your side, so I certainly liked the way they were playing with that, and then at the same time twisted it to she was essentially using that to get into the position where she could actually allow the conveniently plot driven electronic device be evaded because she got into that position. So, it was sort of this case of like, yes, you've kind of been obviously setting this up, but at the same time, you're playing with it nicely enough to where I'm willing to go along with it. It was one of those cases of an episode where they were doing it all quickly enough to where I was happy to go along with it, and kind of get us to like the characters better, but it still feels a little bit by the numbers. But what did you guys think?
Gary, how about you?
There's a few things. I like the episode. I thought it was nice. I liked this whole, the doctor turning out to have set up the whole thing. I didn't think it was as telegraphed by the numbers as perhaps Edmund was talking about. It did take me by surprise for about three quarters of the episode before it started to sink in that might be the case. So it held my suspension long enough. Counting procedures that Coulson basically said, lock it in a vault. It never happened. They take the label off of it. They seal this thing up. So basically, at some place in the storage facility, somebody thinks there's still an empty vault. So I got to imagine you're just setting yourself up for failure, in my opinion, or at least another episode, I suppose, down the road. So there was that. There's a few different things though that that have been bugging me about this incarnation of S.H.I.E.L.D. in general. it was a little bit less in this episode, and I was grateful for it. But I really want them to stop talking about the Avengers. I really want them to stop talking about the Battle of New York. I understand that this is a spinoff of the Avengers. I understand that it happens after the movie, but it just seems like they're beating it down our throat just a little too heavy anymore. And this was the first episode where I have to give them actually credit for dialing it back a little bit. I think there was only one, maybe two references, with, as opposed to the multiple that we've been having. Also, I'm having a hard time with Ming-Na's character. It's an okay character, and maybe it's something, a personal hang-up, and maybe it's just because it's a woman. You know, typically these sort of stoic, angry characters are usually men, at least that's been my experience, and I sort of can let it go. With Ming-Na, it's not. I'm having a harder time letting it go, and it might be a personal prejudice, but this sort of, you know, person, I guess you're waiting to open up, so to speak, or, you know, you're waiting for the crack that's going to, you know, make them a whole person or a more rounded person. It's not working as much for me, and I know she can be, and I guess that maybe that's also part of the frustrating point. I know she could be a better rounded character rather than this, you know, sort of angry, quiet person who just gives these little glib sort of, you know, remarks and doesn't really talk much about anything else. So I might, as I said, there's a whole bunch of reasons why her character isn't working for me, but I think she could, because I know the actress herself could deliver what I would feel is a better performance. Other than that, I like the sort of Sky Ward relationship that is starting to develop, as Edmund mentioned earlier. You know, we're getting some of these, you know, back and forth, more character development, which is nice. I'm glad that they didn't stall it just to push story in general. So I think they have a good balance as far as story versus character development is going, especially this early on in the season.
I don't know. I think that I'm a bit more favorable towards Ming-Na's character, especially in contrast with the other characters and their lack of experience. And this episode in particular seemed to really give her a little bit more of punch, I guess you could say. This one I particularly like because, for one thing, there are lots of little references here to Marvel continuity. Dr. Hall and this whole Graviton thing. Obviously, Graviton is the name that he takes on as a supervillain in the comics, and this felt like the origin story for that character.
Oh, it very much felt comic bookish. Yeah, the whole scientist plot. Yes, I agree.
But for all that, it still really worked for me. I liked Sky and her undercover work. Because, like you said, Edmund, I think you were saying that it played on the questions of her loyalty, and I'm not sure that we still are clear on what exactly is going on with her. I liked it from that perspective. This felt like the show gelling a bit more than we've seen up to this point. Certainly, I feel like this was a little bit of a step from the first two episodes. They're getting away from having to be quote unquote in pilot mode and more in terms of an actual episode, and getting to the actual show that we've been expecting to see. So I'm really enjoying that. But just in general, I think I've been enjoying this show more and more from week to week, and this one was one that really felt like a show that could be sustained.
So yeah, no, I know, I know, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, the I mean, I was kind of, you know, mentioning that as, you know, as the lead in, you know, I really like the way they kind of played on, you know, is she or isn't she an operative, and then once she got into the office, you know, it then became obvious that, you know, no, she was using that to get the access that would get the team, the wireless feed that they would need to actually do it. So, rather enjoyed that aspect of it, and and it bringing you around to, you know, for all intents and purposes, it does seem that she is on board. Mm-hmm. You know, it's and You know, so it's you know, it's a you know, I think it's still, I think it's still, you know, maybe a little bit out there in terms of, you know, how deep is she playing the double agent aspect of this, but yeah, I mean, you know, so, you know, but I think just the fact that we're seeing the character in that much complexity is, is a tribute to the fact that the show is, is starting to step it up and, give it, not just be the standard sort of spy superhero secret agent show that I think some people were afraid it was becoming. So,
Now this one, Bronstum gave an 8 out of 10. Gary, what would you give it? Do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a fair. My quibbles are sort of minor and more structural than this specific episode. I thought it was done. I thought they handled what could be a superhero story, but still kept it within S.H.I.E.L.D. realms. And I like the duplicity of Sky, and it does, the ambivalence is a nice little plot point for them to move forward with. So I liked it a lot.
What would you give it?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'd give it an 8, sir.
Okay. And Edmund?
I'm good with an 8 as well. I would say, quite honestly, without the hand reaching out at the end, it might have been a 7, but with that thrown in, it's an 8.
Okay. Fair enough. So let's go ahead then and move on to the next episode, and here's the promo.
All new ABC Next Tuesday, a rogue agent with extraordinary powers.
We have to bring her in.
We have to take her out.
Determined to destroy the team, even though he trained her.
She's not being watched. She's being controlled.
He can't contain her.
I kill you, or they kill me. You're a robot. Can you do that?
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. All new next Tuesday at 8, 7 central on ABC. And see the season from the very beginning on Watch ABC.
All right, and that would be Season 1, Episode 4, I Spy. The agents track down a mysterious woman who has pulled off a variety of risky capers, but the investigation reveals a secret that could have a negative effect on Coulson. And for those who may have been listening to the previous episode, this was the episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that they previewed at New York Comic Con. So this was the one that I got to see a few days early anyway. So this was the one I was also telling people was the one that I really felt was them really stepping things up. And, well, Gary, how about you? What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I thought this was an incredibly good episode. You know, for someone who's followed the comics of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a while, this had just, for what I thought, it had the nice set of gizmos for it, which Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D. have always been known for, but we haven't seen that much of so far in this incarnation of S.H.I.E.L.D., so it's nice to see them coming back. The eye, of course, was really nice, especially once they sort of had to figure out what was going on. It seemed a little bit obvious to me from the get-go, but I sort of like the thought process. This is being, you know, outspoken, and them trying to figure out and finally realize that it's coming from her eye. The glasses that would duplicate the eyes effects were, you know, as I said, is classic sort of S.H.I.E.L.D. technology. And while I realized they might have taken it from Q Division originally as in the comics, it still has become a staple of S.H.I.E.L.D. that they do have all these, you know, super science gimmicks and gadgets to work with. So it's nice that they're bringing more of those in. I hope they just temper them and don't overuse it, but to include them sparingly is a nice touch. That being said, the funniest moment for me out of this episode was as Ward is, you know, wearing the glasses, pretending to be a black woman, avoiding all mirrors and things like that, and he's getting these commands that flash over the screen, or at least what's supposed to flash in the woman's eyes, and as he reaches that guard's position, and it says seduce him.
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
That is just great writing. You know, it's just that it just cracked me up. I thought it was very appropriate in the sense of, you know, introducing levity to the situation while still staying on on task for it. I thought it was, it just, it seemed really good. It turned out that there was actually a reason why the woman should do that and not just knock him out, as we find out that there's sort of a dead man switch that the guy has to hit every so often, I guess, otherwise an alarm goes off. So like I said, it was I thought it was a well-written movie. It balanced pretty well. It also, I guess, I won't say it gave us any revelations, but it increased the mystery of Coulson as his former, I guess, protege. That wasn't really a partner, more of a protege. Was saying how different he is and what happened to him, and you know, so as if all the sort of glaring markers we've had to date weren't enough. You know, now we have somebody, you know, saying that. What's how has he changed? Why is he like this? And even she sort of put down over it. But it's increasing that sort of, you know, tension and interest in what I imagine at this point they're building to become some sort of big reveal. So I like this. I liked it a lot. It was, you know, funny gadgets, more Coulson mystery, as well as a touching story about, you know, about trying to save the woman who we originally assumed was this, you know, villain who turned out to be good. It was a nice little change up, and the episode worked fantastically for me.
Edmund?
I do not have much to add after that, actually. This was just, you know, the whole setup from having this agent that, can do these... apparently magical extractions of diamonds from I really like the whole setup of the red masked people going into the subway, from the news nowadays you kind of automatically associate with Anonymous or Guy Fawkes, and discovering that no, that's the actual corporation trying to mask their shipment, and then to have her just come in and be able to identify the diamonds and get them out. It was absolutely a case of a true SHIELD mission, as Gary said. But at the same time, I like the fact they were kind of upping the ante in terms of the nature of the mission, but then throwing in these elements of Coulson, yes, taking it up precisely because it was his former agent who he's trying to redeem, basically. And then at the same time, you know, as we've seen the team sort of coming together, you know, having them have that whole sort of hapless moment of initially kind of tweaking the situation by asking about whether it's okay for them to take a bathroom break, and then have that shift into, the van actually being literally taken out because she's caught on to them. It did really feel like, at the same time, they were doing a very good job of bringing the team together more, and also identifying how they still have a little bit of work to do. And Aquila was brought in to say, it's like, okay, this is what a top flight agent does, and you guys are almost there, but not quite. Even though they did get there in the end, I felt it was a case of them stepping up the action, and at the same time, showing us that the team we have is very good, but they're not quite there yet. So it's. This is a bit of a classic Whedon technique, but it seems to be working well so far for me.
And how about that fight between Agent May and Aquila?
Well, yeah, there is that too.
Yeah, that was some nice stuff. I just really enjoyed this. I loved the implication we've been asking for so long that there be some kind of indication of some big bad out there, someone, yeah. And now we have that.
Oh yeah.
And the fact that they've now made these indications about Coulson, and that kind of brings out some of the things that we were anticipating, that there's something about the existing organization as well, mm-hmm. that, you know, is problematic, that S.H.I.E.L.D. itself is problematic, that all those things are coming in there, and we asked for them, and now they're giving it to us. And so it was just a matter of, we should have just been patient? That's how I feel, almost. Yeah. And I feel like that patience is being rewarded. So yeah, it's to me, this was a really good episode. I really enjoyed it. I'm sure that part of it was being in a crowd of people that was enjoying it, but
oh, yeah.
I think just the episode alone stood up very well, and I was happy with it. Bronstom gave it an 8 out of 10. What would you give it, Gary?
I'd give it a 9. I thought this is a great episode. Like I said, it balanced out very well for me. I liked it a lot. It's classic S.H.I.E.L.D. without the superhero aspect of it, which is what they need to, I wouldn't say focus on, but definitely include as they go through these, you know, roundtables of different villains, or you know people who are inciting the problems, that it doesn't always have to be superpowers to be an effective episode.
Mm-hmm. And Edmund, how about you?
I think I'm good with 9 out of 10 as well. I mean, this really felt like the series getting to the place we thought it should be.
Very good. And let's see. As we look to round this one out, I'm thinking we probably should do maybe some of the quick hits, as I'm sure that we would prefer to discuss some of the larger episodes. Okay, so let me go ahead and start that off why don't we just go through these as a group, like I said. And Edmund, you take the first show here. This is from our friend Nadim, who is contributing quite a bit more to the site.
And you're going to have to pause slightly because I have to pull the show notes up.
Okay, fine. While you're doing that, Gary, you take the first show.
Okay, we're doing our little quick hit section here. We're talking about Revenge, Season 3, Episode 1, Fear. In the third season opener, Emily has a new timeline as she renews her request for revenge. And Victoria reunites with her long-lost eldest son, complicating things for her family. Also, a peek at a future wedding that may lead to Emily's downfall. Nadim thought they did a very good job with this episode, and he gave it a rating of 8 out of 10. So, you know, this show has been gaining popularity, and I guess for good reason, if the shows are being reviewed at such a high level.
Yes, in the review, he made mention of the fact that the second season was not very popular among fans, so this seemed to be a turn towards material that was a bit more on the positive side from the fan perspective. But I'll be honest, I have no idea. Why don't you go ahead, and then there was a second episode that he also reviewed.
Oh, absolutely. This is the beginning of season 3 once more. Episode 2, Sin. Emily's latest target is a clergyman who was once an executive at Grayson Global. Meanwhile, Victoria takes an assertive approach with Patrick, and Margot has a compelling offer for Daniel. Once again, they seem to be very consistent. Nadim gave it an 8 out of 10. And rounding out the third episode that Nadim covered on Revenge is Episode 3, Confession. A surprising guest shows up at Nolan's housewarming, and a shocking confrontation results. Meanwhile, Conrad gets introspective about his sins after coming to terms with his morality. I guess they're finding their step within this series. Nadim gave this a 9 out of 10, so I'm assuming the writing is getting even better, and hopefully the acting as well.
Yeah, these it's just funny to hear us talking about these shows, I'm sure, but we always like to expand our portfolio of shows that are being reviewed over on the website, and certainly these are shows that have actually gotten a lot of requests over the years for us to cover them. So it's kind of nice to have Nadim, who is a fan of this type of show, and to be able to add to this particular type of discussion. he also tackled Betrayal, at least he tried to. This show has been getting just ripped to shreds by the critics and has been getting terrible ratings. So far, he only really took on the first two episodes, so just for form's sake. Betrayal, Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. In this drama's opener, a photographer begins an affair with a lawyer for a powerful family, but their secret's in jeopardy when her ambitious husband is the prosecutor in a high-profile murder case in which her paramour is defending the prime suspect. And if you could even make any sense of that description, good luck. But Deem thought that this was actually a strong start, despite the fact that so many critics felt otherwise, and he gave that an 8 out of 10. He kind of took a different approach when it came to the next episode, Season 1, Episode 2, Except When the Bear is Chasing You, and with a name like that for the episode, I can't imagine that it's going to be very good. The description is, Sarah recommits to her marriage to Drew after learning who Jack really is. Meanwhile, Jack and Drew are now adversaries as the investigation of the murder that has rocked the Karsten family proceeds. And he gave that one a 6 out of 10, and I'm guessing by the fact that I have yet to see him offer up a review for the third episode that it just kept going downhill from there. I'm guessing. I can't be sure. All right, so, Edmund, why don't you go ahead and pick up the next one?
Sure. Which would be Scandal. Another show that I am not following. And but this is the season opener for episode 3. It's Handled. In the third season opener, an unexpected allegiance forms in the wake of the revelations about Fitz's mistress. Meanwhile, a determined Rowan allows no one to prevent him from carrying out his orders. And the DM gave this a 9 out of 10.
Yes, it's very clear from his reviews that he loves this show as the absolute madcap, just insane type of drama that it is. In fact, the tone of his reviews is just like glowing over the goofiness of some of what's going on. Obviously, he enjoyed that episode a great deal, and then we have Season 3, Episode 2, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? The origins of Olivia's distant relationship with her dad is revealed through, or are revealed through flashbacks. Meanwhile, the White House and Olivia's firm continue to try to fix the damage they've done, and he also gave this one a 9 out of 10.
Yes.
Well, you know, there's all kinds out there, and Nadim certainly loves this type of show. So, all the power to him. And he's not the only one who is reviewing this kind of show, as we continue to have reviews from Henry for The Good Wife. Season 5, Episode 2, The Bit Bucket. Alicia and Carrie sue the NSA on behalf of a search engine, but they are unaware that Lockhart Gardner's connection to a former client has resulted in the spy agency monitoring the firm's communications, because they needed a reason. Anyway, yeah. Meanwhile, Eli tries to secure Diane's Supreme Court nomination, and Alicia's mom takes steps to support her daughter. Yeah, like I said, this is not too far removed from the other shows when you read the description. It seems like it's all the same stuff. Henry gave this one a 7 out of 10. He was not overly pleased with perhaps the overindulgence of trying to shove all of this real-world stuff into the episodes. And it always seems like when they try to do that, that they score a bit lower. But we have Season 5, Episode 3, A Precious Commodity. Alicia represents a surrogate mother who goes against the wishes of the biological parents. Meanwhile, Diane's Supreme Court candidacy puts her at odds with her colleagues, because it did in the last one, too. And Will makes Alicia a stunning offer. So this seemed to be much more on track, because Henry gave this one a 9 out of 10. So there you go. All right, Gary, why don't you go ahead and start us on the next one?
Oh, yes, and I can actually talk about this because I do watch this show. Sleepy Hollow, Season 1, Episode 4, The Lesser Key of Solomon. Ichabod and Abby search for her estranged sister after she escapes from a psychiatric hospital and finally learns the name of the evil force they are facing. I like this episode. As I'll refer to it, the villain of the week was enjoyable. I enjoyed that the villain actually spoke. In a lot of ways, it sort of resembles or reminds me of the Silence from Doctor Who. And while quiet is ominous, it's not always motivating as a fear factor. Sometimes a slightly creepy voice noise or something like that can be even more fearful than silence, and it did it well. Also, they weren't just faceless villains. They were able to actually sort of attack and fight back, which was a nice thing to see as well. jump back a little bit in this story, though, as they talk about we were finding out a lot more backstory about Abby in this episode, more specifically Abby and her sister, that they had seen one of these evil creatures when they were younger. And while Abby denied it, her sister didn't, and they assumed that her sister was clinically insane and committed her to a psychiatric hospital. And I have to ask, why her sister was so adamant in continuing to profess the truth when all it did was result in her being put into a sane asylum for a whole life. Well, I'm not trying to say Abby's necessarily more prone to lying or anything like that. I found it a bit of a stretch to believe that anyone, even a child, a younger child, might be that adamant that they're willing to put themselves through this when they see that their other sibling is doing fine and dandy by not fessing up and saying what they saw. So so there was that bit of it. Also, Abby had to come to peace that she was able to be free while her sister was committed for all this time. And she had to work through that and even apologize to her sister. And so I liked the bit of the character piece it was, and the villain of the week was entertaining.
Edmund, did you watch this one?
Yes, I did. I'm having a lot of fun actually with both Sleepy Hollow and The Blacklist on Monday nights this season. So this episode. I mean, the thing I actually found more intriguing about this episode was, this whole revelation of the sister was, apparently in league with the sheriff as well. So it's like, okay, she's in the psychiatric hospital, but. Apparently kind of aware of what was going on, which seemed a little bit of a stretch, but but the thing about this show is that they move through everything so fast is that they don't give you enough time to really think about that sort of stuff. So for all the sort of craziness of them going through breaking out the sister, getting her to the cabin, having the German guys, the Latter-day Hessians show up and then winding up at the hospital with the silvery pool of demons. It actually pretty much held together for me, which surprised me given the amount of crazy stuff they were doing. So it still remains a kind of crazy but very entertaining show for me.
And what would you give this episode?
I would give it an 8.
Okay, and Gary?
Henry actually in his review gave it an 8, and I'm going to agree with him. I'm going to give it an 8 as well.
All right, 8s all around. Okay, and then we have Sleepy Hollow, Season 1, Episode 5, John Doe. An unidentified boy is found in Sleepy Hollow, and Ichabod and Abby are called to the case to speak with him, but must hurry to find out who he is and where he's from when they realize something sinister is about to happen. Edmund, yeah. Why don't you just comment briefly on this one?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing with this one is this whole thing of the CDC swooping in, them taking... everybody under quarantine, and then I know it has to happen for the episode, but it still seemed a little too convenient for them to manage to spirit him out and cure everything, because it's all just a time displacement, and we can just hoodwink the CDC like this. So I kind of saw what they were trying to do, but they kind of had to pull a few too many strings to let it happen. So I was a little bit disappointed in the way they wound it up.
Mm. And Gary, how about you?
I have to admit I did not have a chance to see this one yet, John.
Okay.
So I will have to acquiesce to better viewers than myself on this episode.
Gotcha. And Edmund, what would you give this one? Do you think?
I will give it a 7. It wasn't terrible, but it still was very convenient.
Yeah, and that's what Henry gave it, a 7 out of 10. So there you go. All right, to continue down our list, just for form's sake, because I don't think many of us watch this. I guess you'll correct me if I'm wrong, as far as the rest of these shows. Let's see. The Tomorrow People. Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. Humans born with paranormal abilities are hunted by a paramilitary group of scientists who believe they are a threat to mankind. In the opener, Stephen Jameson learns that he is one of the Tomorrow People, a genetically advanced race with abilities of telekinesis, teleportation, and telepathic communication.
Yes, the three T's.
I did watch this. I felt that it had most of the same issues that any pilot does. And it seems like Nadim agreed with me, because he also gave this a 6 out of 10. Did either one of you guys watch this show?
I did.
Okay.
It's as generic and derivative as Nadim deemed it. Maybe it will rise above its origins, but I'm perfectly happy with the 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's the typical rough start to any show. It just seemed to be going through, you know, starting off a show by the numbers. So we have to see where it goes. I mean, the one thing was where Steven kind of, instead of going the direction that you assume that he'll go, he winds up working for Ultra, which is Mark Pellegrino's bad guys.
Yeah.
And thank God he's the bad guy, because he can chew that that scenery all day long. But
even given that, it still felt incredibly derivative.
Oh, absolutely. Like I told Gary at one point, this is a show that, you know, my wife and daughter like to watch, but they alternatively like parts of it and then deride parts of it. So it's that kind of show. Nadim also captured American Horror Story Coven. That would be Season 3, Episode 1, Bitchcraft. Nice title. A young girl discovers she has a strange genetic affliction in the season 3 premiere. That's putting it mildly. I don't even know that I can describe this affliction without an explicit tag. Let's say that a certain part of her anatomy, when in use, is kind of forces the other partner to have, let's say, an aneurysm. Or just bleed from every orifice. That's about as much as I can describe of this. So it's classic American Horror Story. Just put your head together and figure that one out. He gave this a 9 out of 10. As usual, when people enjoy American Horror Story, they really enjoy it. And it is kind of bonkers crazy. It was well done. It's just that it's very strange and really pushes the envelope. I don't know if either one of you watched this or not.
No,
sir.
Okay, well, there you go. And I know that the last few here, as we try and push through this, The Vampire Diaries, Season 5, Episode 2, True Lies. Damon asks Sheriff Forbes to help find Stefan. Elena and Caroline try to find out who is covering up a campus murder. Matt and Jeremy attempt to protect Catherine from Silas. Nadia uses violence to make a point about her own agenda. Oh yeah, there's a whole lot going on there. It's a good start to the season. I gave this one an 8 out of 10. As usual, just the fact that Catherine was dealing with the flu in this episode was just fun and hilarious, because, you know, she's used to being completely immortal and immune to everything and has to deal with stupid human stuff, and she's not too happy about that. But it was a good, fun episode, and I'm liking this season, even if some other people still feel like nothing's going on. They needed to really establish things after the switch to the more college atmosphere, I guess you could say. I'll skip over the next one and go over then to The Originals, which is the spinoff, which is having a bit rougher start to its first season. Season 1, Episode 2, House of the Rising Sun. Rebecca arrives in New Orleans and receives some unexpected news from Haley. When she becomes concerned that Klaus is up to no good, Rebecca seeks help from a reluctant Sophie. Meanwhile, Klaus tries to uncover Marcel's secret weapon, and Marcel enlists Davina's help to carry out his own dangerous plan. If it wasn't for Rebecca being the main character in all of this, this would have gotten a lower rating, because I just really enjoy her character, because she's kind of remorseless in what she does, and she doesn't take any crap from anybody. I give this one a 7 out of 10. We then had Season 1, Episode 3, Tangled Up in Blue. Klaus and Rebecca try to unravel Marcel's empire from within in spite of Elijah's concerns, which is kind of odd considering Elijah is completely out of the picture in this episode. Anyway, meanwhile, Marcel hosts a huge vampire party, because that's what one does, and Haley learns that the supernatural creatures of New Orleans are reacting to the existence of a hybrid baby. Leaving all that aside, the thing that annoyed me about this episode was that things were going along quite well until basically in the last 5 minutes, everything goes back to exactly the way that it was before. So essentially everything that happened in this episode was completely pointless. That annoyed me quite a bit. So this one dropped for me down to a 6 out of 10. They're going to have to try a little bit harder. And, you know, the Vampire Diaries, what makes it so much fun is that they just never stop. They're constantly pushing the plot forward, even faster than maybe is even the smart way to do it, but they just keep the momentum going, and there's just consequences constantly being pushed forward. And then there's this show that seems to not be taking advantage of the lessons they learned on the previous show, so they've got to really get their game going for this in order to keep it on the right track. So let's go ahead and wrap up with the last of the quick hits, and that would be Elementary, Season 2, Episode 3, We Are Everyone. Can't imagine what this is about. Holmes is targeted by a group of cyber activists. Of course he is, when he hunts for a civil contractor who leaked classified information. Oh boy. Meanwhile, Jones signs up for an online dating service. Now, Bronze Thumb gave this an 8 out of 10, despite his reservations over the obvious parallels to certain hacktivist groups out there in the classified information leakages that we've had to endure in recent months. But how about you guys? Any of you watching this one?
Yes, I'm watching it. Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead, Edmund.
I know. I saw it, and I would actually agree with Bronze Thumb on the 8 out of 10. But as much out of the what it revealed about the characters, as opposed to the actual story, which was pretty much paint by numbers of Snowden or Assange or whichever cyber activist you want to plug in there. But what was fun about this was both the things about Holmes going after the cyber activists and the shoe on head and the interactions there, and then quite honestly, what I really loved about this episode was this thing about her, basically being, forced, virtually forced into signing up for this dating service by her quote unquote normal friend, so she get out there, and then the guy she winks at is the one who actually comes around just to check up on her, and I thought that was it was a really lovely sort of real world interaction and sign of no, this is a really good guy as well, this seems to be the pattern with Elementary now, is that you have the regular cases that are perfectly fine to follow along with, but the fun stuff is what's happening about the actual characters. So I would agree with Bronze Thumb on the 8 out of 10.
Okay, and Gary?
I think to what Edmund was saying, while the actual subject matter of the case might be a little blasé now, or we might have felt that we've had our fill of it as we've heard about it incessantly for months and months now, the whole mechanism of the show just worked really well. Holmes and Sherlock just mesh really well. They play off each other both well within the written story as well as the actors themselves. It just comes together so well that it almost doesn't matter what the actual cases they're trying to solve, because the rest of them work so well together. As Edmund was mentioning earlier, the Watson having this sort of revelation, in a sense, at least I felt it was a revelation of, she can't spend her time just, spending all of it with Holmes and going through his little puzzles and when she was sitting with her friend and Holmes was arranging these dolls into different crime scenes. So, and she'd like look at it and go, oh, that's an attempted murder. Oh, that was a real assault by a serial killer. And you're like, and even her friends looking at her incredulously. And you have to realize that, you know, when her friend sort of put, you know, tells her she signs up for the date for this dating scene, you know, she needs a life outside of Holmes. I mean, yeah, outside of Holmes, he can't be the be all and end all. She can't just have, as she told her friend, I think 2 hours a week. You know, she needs a life as well. So I like them pursuing that. And, you know, often, you know, as if you want to harken back to the classics, you know, Watson would pop in and out, but had his own life very much so, where this Watson really doesn't. So I'd like to see a little bit outside, you know, focus. Maybe not every episode, but a little bit outside the circle, I think, might bring something good into it. Hopefully her next boyfriend isn't a murderer. And I still would like to see it. I think it's a good step to bring a little diversity. You know, Holmes and Watson in his apartment can be a little bit too much of a claustrophobic environment. You know, when he went over to London, I thought that was nice that they were out and about a little bit more. I enjoyed the format when it opened up a little bit. So hopefully this might lead to that same thing.
Okay, and you, what would you give this episode?
I'm gonna go with an 8. It's really close to a 9, especially with the little closing line of "Oh, you kissed him too," that Sherlock threw back at Watson after she came back from the date, which was nice, but not quite a 9, but a strong 8.
Okay, fair enough. All right, well, wow, we got through a lot of material in this episode. I thank everybody both on our end and the listeners for sticking with it. And we've ran into a few problems along the way, but I think we handled them okay. Clearly, we still have quite a lot still to cover, though, and that'll be in the next episode. So, yeah.
Hang in there.
Hang in there. It's not over yet. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Misuse of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...